Occupied Territory with Mike Fader, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. I have to apologize to everybody who I went to so much trouble to tell to tune in at 1 o'clock for Occupied Territory. That's when we like to start, but we didn't get a chance to do that today. We will try to do that in the future. Also, I want to make sure that everybody joins into the program. So the call number here, if you're in a place you can write it down or someplace you can note it, is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And you can send us tweets with questions and comments at PRN_radio. PRN_radio. We also have a Facebook page, but I don't know if I say this. It's possible to remember it, but it's, http://facebook.com. Don't need the www. I found that out. facebook.com/PRNOccupied. facebook.com/PRNOccupied. So go there and chip in, comment, put in any videos that you've seen that you want other people to see, whatever. So the main sub, we're going to have somebody from, if we get in touch with them, if we connect them, somebody from Occupy London, who recently have had some trouble there. They were camping outside St. Paul's Cathedral in London, and there was a lot of difficulty there. I want to talk to them and see what they have in common with us, what they might have as a difference from the Occupy movements here. The main subject this week is, and everybody has seen all these videos now to the point where you don't want to see them anymore. It was like when they took, when for weeks and weeks after the planes hit the towers in downtown Manhattan, you saw 1,000 times you saw these planes hitting. People couldn't get over the morbid fascination of it. And it's human nature, I guess, right? But so now we've seen 1,000 times Lieutenant John Pike and another one of his associates on the UC Davis police spraying in a casual way, as if he was spraying, as many people have put it, insects on plants in his garden, spraying seated, nonviolent students, kids at the University of California, Davis. Not renowned, by the way. It's not Berkeley. This is not a renowned hotspot for revolution. These were kids who were part of the Occupy movement, just sitting there. They were told they were sitting there illegally. They hooked their arms, and they expected to be, you know, carried away by the police or dragged off by the police in their usual brutal, nasty fashion. They were resisting, but, you know, they went limp. They're just sitting there, and this guy sprays them. Well, now, Mr. Pike, Lieutenant Pike, soon to be hopefully Mr. Pike with no rank, has put on administrative suspension. He's suspended with pay. He's still earning his money, though. He's not around, you know, he's not sitting at his desk. He's a desk job guy, by the way. It's always the desk job guys, you know, the superintendents, the inspectors, who want to turn into John Wayne. You know, they miss the days on the street beating people over the head, I guess. So he's been sitting at a desk for a long time, Lieutenant Pike, who's the guy everybody in the world saw on this video spraying an orange toxic chemical in people's faces. It's not a food, by the way. Fox News thinks that pepper spray is a food. I think maybe for Thanksgiving that somebody should go over to Bill O'Reilly and Megyn Kelly's house and spray it directly into their face and say, Happy Thanksgiving. You don't need the turkey now because it's a food. I don't know how nutritious it is. So here he is spraying these people. So he and the police chief at UC Davis have been put on administrative leave. The students, the faculty, and half the other people in the world want the chancellor of the university to quit. She says she won't quit. And we're astounded at what we see. I mean, you know, in the 60s, it was Kent State. They shot people down. They killed four people on a campus one day at Kent State during the anti-war riots and protests and demonstrations. And these people were nonviolent. There were riots in the streets in the 60s, but they had to do when people went out of their minds after Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King got killed. That was just too much for people, so there were riots. But this was nonviolent protesting in the 60s, and the cops were brutal back then, and in those days sometimes they actually used live ammunition. But everybody is looking at this now. So next week on this show here, we're going to concentrate on this excessive militarized police brutality all over the country for no good reason. No good reason. And there's Homeland Security is involved in this. They've got equipment they shouldn't even have to use, or they really shouldn't be using. They are trained as if they were SWAT teams, or if they're trained as if they're the 10th Mountain Division, you know, when they're just actually arresting students in the streets at a university. So something is very wrong here. So my guest for next week is Norm Stamper, who is the former police chief, of Seattle, Washington. And he was the police chief during the time when they had the World Trade Organization protests, militant protests in Seattle. And he was forced to resign after that, and he has since regretted his behavior there and his orders to his police force, and written a book about what he calls the dark secrets of the police training, and he'll be our guest next week. And we need to talk about how the police have gotten so out of control and how the authorities are permitting this to happen. Because last time I looked at it, the police are actually working for us, the citizens who pay their, pay our taxes and pay their salaries. Anyhow, let's go straight to Occupy London, and we have Artin Giles with us. You there?
Hi there, yeah.
Hi. Am I saying your name right?
Yeah, Artin Giles.
Okay, Artin Giles. Now, you've been there for how long have you been there now? A few weeks, right? Several weeks?
Yeah, the occupation started on October the 15th, and we've been there staying strong since.
Okay, and what most people over here know is the encampment and then the occupation and all the trouble that went on at St. Paul's. Maybe you could tell us like what was involved there and where the situation is now.
Sure. Well, as you know, we started occupying on October the 15th. And then 2 weeks later, we took over another site 15 minutes away from that, which is London Finsbury Square. And then just recently, this Saturday, we took over the abandoned UBS building. So the movement is spreading.
The UBS is that's a bank building, right?
This bank, yeah. They had a building just next to Finsbury Square, which they had abandoned since 2009. And we are turning that into all the community centres that have been shut, nurseries, local libraries where people can drop in and really feel part of the community to build that spirit. Now, in terms of the legal situation, today, actually, we had the first court hearing. And so that was just to timetable in when the actual court proceedings will start taking place.
Court proceedings in regard to what?
In regard to the City of London Corporation, mm-hmm. Are the local authority who look over the St. Paul's encampment,
mm-hmm.
They have claimed that we are blocking access along the public highway with the tents, and so they want to get us evicted. They served us with an eviction notice last Thursday, which basically said that if you don't leave by 6 p.m., then we will go to High Court and start legal proceedings. We had actually a small ceremony to pass that 6 o'clock where we had a few people all stood still, a one-minute silence at that 6 o'clock to pass that point and say that we're not leaving. And then they started court proceedings, and today it was decided in court that 19th of December will be the date where the actual court proceedings start taking place.
So, in other words, so are you still actually at camp there?
Yes, we are. We're in camp there at all three sites. There are still tents going on now. And right now, the General Assembly is going to begin to take place in the next half an hour or so.
All right. So you didn't have the same situation, which I'm sure you've seen over and over again over in this country, where the police charged in and evicted everybody.
Sure. Yeah. No. We haven't had that same situation. Obviously, in America, probably the police are a bit more aggressive. Down at St. Paul's, I wouldn't say they've been friendly, but in some cases, actually, they've been quite cooperative with drunk people coming in on site. And if they start to get abusive, mm-hmm. then the police come in and sort of escort them off site. However, we did have a few Asian provocateurs coming on site specifically to disrupt the site and give justification for the police to come in and perhaps break it up.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, the police haven't attempted to come in and evict us. However, a few weeks back, we tried setting up encampments in Trafalgar Square and the House of Parliament. And as you may have heard a week ago, the government passed a new bill that banned squatting in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
And that did see some police action, police brutality, where a few of the campers got arrested.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. What do people in England, I mean, you're not taking polls over there or anything, you don't have the ability to do that, but what do people that you know over there, or people in general, what do people think of the police violence in this country?
Yeah, definitely. We are in some ways shocked what's happened in Oakland, in obviously Wall Street, and the pepper spray in
right.
California. Incidences like that, we are definitely shocked. And we've had a few people from across America come down to the General Assemblies when they've been in England and bring a message of solidarity. And we've given them a message of solidarity, take back to their General Assemblies to show that we are constantly supporting them and that we are horrified with the police brutality going on in America.
Right. Let me ask you about also that you occupied an abandoned bank building. Now, that's still private property. You just, what, walked right in?
Well, the bank was being squatted previously by a few people, and they invited us in and said, this is a great space. Please use it. Please use it to advance your message and advance your camp. So right now, the legal situation with that is that UBS lawyers served a notice to some of the campers in that building last week. However, that notice didn't have a claim number on it. It didn't have a stamp on it approved. And so it was a bit rushed because it was served the day after the occupiers moved in,
mm-hmm.
which that it was nullified and proved void.
But you're still on private property, right? I mean, theoretically or actually.
Well, theoretically, we are on private property, but as I said, it will have to go through court in order to evict us. And there, we do have a strong case because there have been squatters there during the G20 protest,
mm-hmm.
and there are people that have been staying there for quite a while who support the occupiers, and as I said, who invited us in. So there is a court case, and we do have a pretty strong case to contest. For a reason to be there.
Now, if UBS owns the building, do they still own the building, or is there some other landlord that owns the building?
I believe that UBS do still own the building.
So, are there services in the building? I mean, if they left it, I mean, is there water? Is there bathrooms? Heat? Whatever. Is there any of that there?
There is electricity, lights, and there are some. Sort of desks and other, obviously, utilities and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
There is no water, but in some parts there are electricity, and there is no heating, but compared to London Finsbury Square and St. Paul's, which is all outside, obviously, being indoors, it's much warmer.
Right.
We've really been able to use that space as a bank of ideas. That's what we've turned it into, a bank of ideas, where people can come along and share their alternative views. For example, today we had the poet Billy Bragg, who came in and did a political songwriting workshop, which was received really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really a place where people can get their message across and where people can start to develop productive ideas.
In this country, there is the standard right-wing and even major media criticism, which is either contemptuous or they're a bunch of dirty hippies, they should get baths, they should get jobs. What kind of attitude are you receiving from, let's say, the middle class or people in general in England?
Well, as you'd expect, there are very mixed views within the public. However, the public support for the camp has been absolutely fantastic in terms of people writing messages of solidarity, tweeting us, telling us what a fantastic thing we've been doing, in terms of financial support and other donations. You must remember that we provide 3 hot meals a day, which are all through donations to about 300 to 400 campers.
Hmm.
And that just shows the level of public support. However, the mainstream media, as it were, some have been very critical. In fact, one daily newspaper ran a campaign specifically saying, boot them out. But we are constantly trying to make our message clearer and to portray it to the mainstream media, who can then portray it to the public. And so it is a hard job. There are very anti-Occupy people working in the media who may twist stories, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on an editorial level, if we say one thing, the editor may switch to something else. For example, when a journalist came along and did a few profiles of people, and we specifically said, don't mention the word ringleaders, the editor of that newspaper decided not to and mentioned the word, or called them ringleaders.
Well, the same thing happens over here. The big paper, I don't know, maybe in the whole country, but certainly my paper in New York City is the New York Times. Clearly, there's been an editorial decision to portray, to use even certain language, to portray the whole Occupy movement as a bunch of aimless, jobless, good-for-nothings, and people who are confused, don't know what they're doing, and have nothing better to do. And, you know, people suffer with that because they don't have the information they need. Here's the other criticism over here, which is sort of lightening up as people finally get the point. But I'll ask you, and if you're just tuning in, this is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. We're talking with Artin Giles, who is in Occupied London. And there are a lot of criticism over here from all sorts, from all political perspectives, is we don't understand what their goals are. They're confused. They want this. They want that. What are their goals, and what are they after? Otherwise, we can't support them if they don't have goals. If I ask you, what is your main goal over there? Why are you doing this?
Sure. Well, in answer to that question, we have issued an initial statement on the second day, which included 9 points that we wish to address. For example, we want regulators to be genuinely independent of the industries they regulate. We demand an end to global tax injustice and democracy representing corporations. But the way that I would summarize the whole Occupy movement is that it's a global movement in order to bring about awareness for the need for systematic change due to the inequalities caused by corporate greed. And we've seen a massive rise in the inequality gap. And personally, and a few other people, a lot of other people, general consensus is that it has been caused by corporate greed, where corporations are going down a reckless path to boost their profits, and ethics and morals have been completely thrown out of the office room.
I guess you could say this applies globally, too, because of globalization. Like, for instance, if you look at what's going on in what has happened since the past, late winter and early spring in Arab countries, and you see what's happening right now, that the Egyptians are facing the real power there, which always was the real power, the military. And the military is actually a large national and even international corporation there, and they have received for 40, 50 years, billions of dollars in American corporate and, government aid over there. So actually, I think that's what unites all these protests, even the ones that are far more dangerous and violent over there, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, there was a press conference where one journalist from, as you'd say, quite a right-wing newspaper, he stated, well, what the hell are you doing here? The public aren't sure, your aims aren't certain, and we don't get it. And one of our supporters stood up and she said, what we are doing here is we're joining all the dots together. We're joining the dots regarding Palestine, regarding corporate greed, regarding austerity cuts, regarding the Eurozone crisis, regarding the Arab Spring, regarding other movements across the world. And we're joining these dots and linking them to a common sort of ground and something that we should work towards. But the mainstream media are not doing that, and that is why people do not have the information to realize that there is a need for this corporate greed to be addressed?
Well, we only have like a minute or two left, and but that's a perfect segue into why the corporate mainstream media has, thank God, really, that there's an end run. There's a way around all that now, which there never was before. I mean, there is the internet, there is texting, there is all this other stuff, and the only thing we have to be aware of is that the government doesn't pass laws to be able to pull the plug on all this, you know.
Definitely, definitely. And which is why our constant message is, if you want to know what's going on, check our Twitter, check our Facebook, and best of all, come down, because we will guarantee you that you will not get the best message through these media outlets. But the best thing for you is literally to come down physically to the camp, have a cup of tea, chat to a few people, attend the General Assembly, which is for everyone to attend, because we wish to engage the public and see that we do have viable alternative solutions, and see that they can pitch in their ideas as well to these General Assemblies, and hopefully we can work to a productive alternative.
I really appreciate your coming on. So I guess if people want to communicate with you, I mean, certainly in this country, they could go to your website. It's Occupy London?
It's occupylsx.org, and on there are also links to other sites, the UBS site and the London Finsbury Square site. We're also on Twitter, www.twitter.com/OccupyLSX. And you can send us an email as well, general@OccupyLSX.org.
So listen, if you're in a bank, why don't you set up your own, why don't you charter your own bank and start loaning out money at very low interest or no interest or something?
Well, that would be fantastic. Obviously, we don't have all the means of money, but that's an idea. But what really the bank is a bank of ideas. It's a community center. Obviously, we've got a zero tolerance policy on alcohol and smoking inside the building. And so people can come in there with their kids. Some kids have been coming in pushchairs, 3 months old, babies on mother's arms, and seeing what a great thing this is, where people can drop by, and all these community centres that are being shut down due to the government cuts, we're providing a space for that to happen.
Well, I think that's wonderful, because yeah, that's what this is all about. Obviously, all over the world, government, and now in our democracies, such as they are, government has actually stopped working for the people that it's supposed to represent. So there's nothing wrong with finally just taking over spaces and creating our own government, because the other government for which we pay taxes has turned its back on us. I guess we'll have to move on. Thanks for coming on, Artin Giles.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We will talk to you again sometime.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Mike Fader here on Occupied Territory. If you want to get in touch with us, check out our page. Just go to prn.com. PRN, is it PRN.FM. PRN.FM, and you just, you know, you can look at our schedule. You'll see I do a show then tomorrow on Thursdays, which is sort of free-form monologues, commentary about everything. But on Wednesdays at 1 p.m., we're here every Wednesday, and check out our page on there, go to the schedule, and we have on Progressive Radio Network here on PRN, we have probably one of the best, if not the best, you know, lineup of progressive hosts and shows and radio shows that you're going to find anywhere in the world. It's better than most of the stuff that used to be filling that slot, you know, in public radio here in this country. NPR, you could throw that out in the trash. That's utterly useless. NPR is a kind of a vanilla pudding root canal job when it comes to anybody ever learning anything. There's nothing there at all. So don't even bother with NPR, National Public Radio. Just go to Progressive Radio Network, and you know wherever you live, there's some local you know, public school radio station or some public radio station, and maybe they'll give you some news. Forget about the major media, although I have to say that once in a while, if you go to MSNBC, and you look at it and you listen, or you could go to Current TV. Keith Olbermann, who left MSNBC, went to Current TV, C-U-R-R-E-N-T, and he still does a wonderful show. It's really worth watching. And a couple of the shows on MSNBC are very good and will give you the right information. Other ways to find out about what's going on constantly is you can go to Occupy Wall Street, and they have on their webpage addresses for all the other Occupy movements, and they will have live streams, and you'll get information about what's going on. Also, always go to alternet.org, which will give you a daily update of everything that's going on. So I think we'll do is take a little break here. And if anybody out there wants to call, and I really want to try to get people into the habit of calling, it's 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And the tweet is PRN at PRN underscore radio. And give us a call. Tell me about what you think about what the police are doing here. I mean, a lot of us lived through the 60s, old farts that we are, and there was a lot of police violence in those days. But and it was rough and it was bad, and a lot more people got arrested. People got beaten up. They used dogs in those days, even up in northern cities. They had dogs on leashes, Dobermans, things like that. Things were bad then. But I have to say that a lot of times in the civil rights movement, it was mostly nonviolent. But a lot of the anti-war movement could get kind of nasty and aggressive. I don't think Americans in general take too well to nonviolence. It's a violent country. You know, it's not natural for us. But what we've been seeing is nonviolent people being sprayed, being beaten up. And what's to me not worse, but which is astounding, which this I never saw before, is the press, the working press, even right-wing media. People have been knocked to the ground, put in chokeholds, arrested, and prevented from doing their jobs. This attack on the press, to me, is even scarier than what the cops are doing to nonviolent protesters. We'll take a little break now, and if anybody wants to call, I'd be glad to take your calls. Otherwise, I'll come back and tell you everything else I know. Okay, Mike Fader back again, and we have Natalia, who lives in L.A., and you're on.
Hi, yes, I would like to congratulate everybody all over the world that's taking, you know, the time to do something to change the world, because it has been under so much injustice, and it's not, it's like 200 years of injustice, but, you know, part of it, I think it's because of the monetary system. The whole gold search and the value we put outside ourselves instead of the intrinsic value we should give all of us. Mm-hmm. And I believe the solution is, you know, help the planet grow a heart and think of us, ourselves as humans, not as humans better than anything else, but as the cells and tissue, the fiber that is the heart, and that we're all part of this enormous breathing living organism, which is our planet.
How would you get this message across to, let's say, your elected representatives?
Well, I think they're cancer. I mean, they are cancer cells. They destroy everything in their path, and they poison everything in their path. So we have to, you know, like any other organism, be stronger, exercise, you know, get the adrenaline going so that we can combat this cancer.
Well, acting positive is something, acting positively, obviously, is something we should all do, and it's better for our personal health and better for our society's health. Meanwhile, we have this real problem, which is... problem is we have elected representatives, and we live in a democracy where we go and vote for people, and I don't know if we can actually turn our backs on that, but how do we deal with it?
Well, I think we can deal with it if we turn those unhealthy cells into healthy cells, and you say, you know, you can change. You can change. You can choose to change and be part of a positive world instead of this negative outview that everybody's out to get you and that they have to save their money. And, you know, the fear that they have of losing power, I mean, the illusion of power, which is true because they don't have any power. They're just, you know, all they have is money. And money doesn't talk back to you, doesn't give you any sense of, the more money they have, the less power they feel they have. They feel they have to have more money. So it's just, you know, an endless cycle of delusion that they have. So, you know, to get them out of that, you just have to open your eyes and see what a wonderful and beautiful planetary system we have.
Well, you know what, I think we can all agree on that. I have to say, I think we can all agree on that, but I don't really see any solution to the people who actually own and run the country. They're not going to pay any attention to what you're saying. There's got to be a way to get through to them, and I think this Occupy movement is probably the way to do it. So I really appreciate your calling, you know.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. I think that is the way to connect things. Thank
you very much. I appreciate that. So tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving in the home of the brave and the land of the free. And I've been noticing on a lot of websites, it's funny, on a lot of websites, the ones I look at and the ones I subscribe to, they've been issuing manuals on how to get along at Thanksgiving with your relatives when they talk about the Occupy movement or the state of the country. So, for instance, so some of it's funny and some of it's just plain sad, but other it's just like, you know, for instance, you're at the table, and so number one, your idiot Uncle Ray says, why don't they get a bath and get a job? What's wrong with them? Answer, well, you know, and then it, one guy wrote, what you're thinking, you know, parenthesis, what you're thinking. Maybe Ray could get a job, deep sea diving without a helmet. Something like that. But that what you say to Uncle Ray, because you're sitting at the table and, you know, it's a family gathering. And, you know, Thanksgiving can be really shattering. Everybody in the world knows. I mean, they've made movies like this, Home for the Holidays, right? Everybody knows that sometimes it's the worst time of the year. In fact, more people go into mental hospitals. True. This is true. And believe me, this is a subject that I'm an expert on. More people go into mental hospitals and make extra appointments with their therapists and take more antidepressants, get more depressed around Thanksgiving and Christmas than any other time of the year. This is when you're supposed to go home with your family. You're supposed to be with the relatives in the bosom of your family. And this everybody understands. You go back, and if you're lucky, you have a good, decent, loving family. But what is that, 1 out of 50? I don't know. The rest of the families in the world are basically on a continuum, right? You know, it's anywhere from horrendous to, that one's a little awkward. This is a little, that's how mom is. That's how dad is. You know, that's my sister. That's how she is. But this is the way it works. So a lot of times, a lot of people are listening now. You're going to go home for Thanksgiving and people are going to say, you know, people try to avoid politics on Thanksgiving, but inevitably it comes up, you know? And people will say, "This Occupy movement, you know, just a bunch of hippies." The president, you know, I really believe that Ron Paul is right. You know, we shouldn't do anything for anybody. And if people die, well, that was their own fault. Or 9-9-9, pass the pizza. Are you gonna have pizza on Thanksgiving? Whatever it is, somebody's going to say something outrageous and stupid and ignorant because most people consume their news from places that misinform you, that literally lie, that actually lie or have an agenda, which is to destroy any sort of democracy in the country and promote business against all civil, human and legal rights. I mean, it's clear this is what's going on. We are sliding straight into a corporate police state. So when you go home this Thanksgiving, be prepared. be prepared, and you know it. You're going to go in there with an attitude because you're, you know, you're outraged at what's going on, rightfully, and you show up, and then, you know, it's always the other thing is always you show up there, and you know, if you're lucky, you live in the middle class or upper middle class or whatever. There's going to be enough food there for everybody. In fact, it's going to be more than enough food for everybody. But that is not the way it is, obviously, for the whole rest of the world. So it's going to be a rough Thanksgiving. I mean, for a long time, the country has been asleep. It's been in a coma. It's been in a political coma. And people have been, you know, they've been buying whatever stupid crap that somebody else invented last week to sell you. Everybody's been buying all this stuff, consuming. What did Bush say after 9/11? Everybody should go out and shop. And everybody has gone out and shopped. They've done it for 40 years now. There have been no, except for some very large anti-war demonstrations in the, you know, in 2002 and 2003, when Bush and his thugs, in, you know, invaded these other countries and occupied them, and you know, got rid of taxes for the rich and everything. You know, there were some very big anti-war demonstrations, and that's actually when a lot of the police militarization tactics started. And then slightly before that, there was the meeting in Seattle, the World Trade Organization, and this the battle for Seattle. There was this huge outpouring of people who understood what was going on, that these people basically own and run the world, and the rest of us are just slaves to them. So, but it's been roughly 40 years since the entire society has erupted this way, civil rights, anti-war, and everything else. Do we have a caller?
We have a caller. Austin is on the line.
Austin. Okay, Austin, go ahead. You're on.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, Austin.
Hey, Mike, it's that Austin, the one who's been corresponding with you.
Sure.
Good to speak to you finally.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I'm wondering about the policing of today versus the police of civil rights. I remember as a kid, and I'm a bit younger than you, that there were certain cops who had a modicum of, shall we say, social decorum about them back then, and that my concern is that part of the problem with policing today is they act as an extension of the culture, and you know, the whole insanity that was the overstimulation that we have on every level in the media, and they didn't get taught civics as we had been taught, and you know, these are all concerns of mine that the cop today is a different kind of person.
Yeah, I think something clearly something is missing, and it does have to do with the education and training of the police in the last 10 or 20 years. But you know, I think it's part, and I think you said this, of the endemic of the whole culture. Actually, history. Real American history and civics and what they used to call civics. This has not been taught in our schools or has been downgraded to the point where it's hardly ever taught for the last 30 or 40 years in the United States, in local school districts everywhere. People don't even understand their own country. They don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand anything about American history. And also there's this fetish for the military. I mean, all these video games, special ops, all these, you know, chiseled, rugged soldiers, you know, of fortune, you know, and SEAL team this and SEAL team that. I mean, the country is struck dumb by this idolization of the military.
Did you hear about the study that a lot of kids today don't know the difference between, like, they blur the lines between reality and video games, where there's so much killing going on in video games, there comes a point of saturation where you lose the line of demarcation from reality to non-reality.
Well, I think it could easily happen. I mean, that's a discussion we're going to, actually, in about 2 weeks, we're going to have a discussion like that on one of the shows here on PRN, because a friend of mine just wrote, he was a writer and then was vice president, actually, for a while, of Marvel Comics, and he's going to come on. We're going to have this whole conversation about comics and video games. But when it comes to the cops, something went wrong. Something went very wrong, and that's why next week on the show we're going to have the former police chief of Seattle and ask him these very questions.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, Austin. So, yeah.
Take care, Mike. It's good talking to you.
Yeah, and keep in touch. Okay. We're going to probably end a little early today, and I just wanted to mention to everybody, since I did say it is Thanksgiving, so I don't know. You know, you got to make that balance. I want to come back at it. You've got to make this balance somehow. You know, that's your family, right? That's where you come from, literally. You know, that's where you were brought up. That's where you weren't brought up, whatever. But that's the house you lived in. That's your DNA. That's where maybe you learned some basic things or learned them wrong, whatever. But that's the place. That is the place, right? And you go back there, and you're going to have these discussions with people. And Here's a way to practice nonviolence. See, obviously, I'm not like that, which is why I'm so obsessed with it. I am not a nonviolent person. For me, you're not going to get Gandhi-like behavior, and even in my old age. And I approve, I admire, and I'm amazed, and I admire the people in these Occupy movements who practice nonviolence, because it is the only way it's going to work. There is no way that anybody in this country, you know, look at the militias, the crazy militia groups out there, the Christian militias and everything else. There's no way you can fight. You see how the police are. I mean, even in the local community, in Portland, Oregon, or even, well, not to mention the big cities, on a university campus, you got people dressed up like they're fighting, space aliens or terrorists armed with explosive devices. These are just students they're talking. So this is the kind of police and soldier mentality that the country's in now. You notice in Egypt, finally, the veil was taken away when Mubarak went. And now the real power is in charge, and the people are rioting, but they're rioting against the real power, which is the army. The army is not Mubarak, right? Mubarak was forced to leave. Nobody is going to force the Egyptian army to do anything it doesn't want to do. And we in this, and there are police states increasingly. The whole world is going more and more towards police states everywhere, in democracies included. And in this country, the same thing is happening. And you're going to see what happens now. Now that the super committee failed in its job, which was inevitable because they're all bribed by corporations, now that they failed in their job, automatic deficit cuts are going to trigger in. And there's supposed to be $500 billion of them in the next year or two or a couple of years for the military, $500 billion, which is not, you know, which is a good chunk of the military budget. Let's see where America stands in terms of what the military budget is like, because right away there's pushback, severe pushback from senators who are owned by the aerospace industry, who are owned by the defense weapon and by the weapons industries, General Electric and all these other places, and General Dynamics. And there's pushback from all the people in the Pentagon. I mean, Leon Panetta is saying, well, the terrorists will be eating in Starbucks. They'll be dining in the White House if we cut $1 from the Pentagon budget. Meanwhile, we have to cut $1 trillion from the Pentagon budget. We have bases in 120 countries. We have special ops going on where we assassinate people in 75 other countries that we don't even know about. We have a gigantic military presence in Germany. And what is that there for? Don't they know Stalin died? That was 60 years ago. The Russians aren't going to attack Germany. We don't need a military base there. Why do we just send a couple of thousand Marines to establish a military base in Australia? Could you explain that to me? We are very much in danger of having, we have a police state and a military dictatorship here hovering right over us. And the surveillance techniques they use, the fact that the Constitution has been ripped in half and thrown, flushed down the toilet, we are in danger here, which is all the more reason why I have fixed on this Occupy movement. It's the only true grassroots, up from the street, actual regular people movement I've seen in 40 years in this country. And we have, I believe we all have a responsibility. Yeah, we can vote. We can vote if we want. It's good. It's good exercise. It's good cardio. You can move your arm up and down a couple of times. You could press a lever or you could push a button. You'll feel better. You might breathe a little better, but you only get to do that, like one time. But if you really want to do something, I think we have to get involved in this Occupy movement. So wherever you live, in whatever city you live in, check on Occupy, whatever it is, Detroit, Atlanta, any place, Toronto, and see what they need. Go down there, help them out, send them some money, whatever you need to do. Because I really think we have to do that. And we all have to stick together, the citizens of this country, because they will eat us alive, these people. And I remember what Benjamin Franklin said just after signing the Declaration of Independence. We must all hang together, or assuredly we shall all hang separately.